This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn-Mark Roshan-Kanison and Noel Lim. It is 6am, Tuesday the 1st of December. And remember how yesterday we were already lamenting the fact that we were heading into the last month of the year? Well, it's here, guys. It's
four
December.
4 more weeks, right?
To just the year 4 end. More weeks, yeah. How does that feel?
Not sure. Let me just get through today.
Yeah, no. I realized that Christmas songs and Christmas trees have started coming up. And that's been a slightly odd experience. Admittedly, I think they started coming up like 2 weeks ago, which is, you know, pretty...
Actually, just right after Deepavali.
Yes, at least they gave us the grace of doing it after Deepavali this year. Unlike the last few years, and yes, you've heard me say this before, this has been a sore point for the last few years. But I saw pictures of the pavilion. I think it was pavilion decorations. Mm-hmm. Apparently, it was done by Christian Dior. And
yes,
it was very, very nice. It looked really beautiful. Almost beautiful enough for me to take the venture into the great state of Kuala Lumpur, or the great city of Kuala Lumpur, which I often don't do.
It's a fantastic city. You don't know what you're missing.
But it's just so far away.
Oh, it's not so far away from me.
It feels like beyond the pale.
See, in Selangor, we've got those golden arches on the Perro Highway.
We are in Kuala Lumpur.
Tamantun's not counted as KL City.
Yeah, it's really Bali Jaya, please.
Okay, well, this is going to be a long-running disagreement. And in the meantime, we do have a number of things lined up to talk with you this morning. Later on at 6:30, what do we have, Noel?
Well, okay, so Biden and Trump and Australia and China.
Lots
Biden
of different
and
fights
Trump,
there.
Trump and Australia. This is like, you know, we had
Australia and China.
Sorry, my brain's not working this morning. It's like how we had the Mike Tyson had a fight this over the weekend, right? So these are all the big fights that we're seeing over the week. But I'll be talking about something a little less upfront. We're going to be talking about reskilling and whether it's for everyone, because we often talk about it, but it's easier said than it is done. Of course, towards the end of the hour, we're taking a look at the local papers and the portals, and that's going to be primarily focused on the two committee budgets that passed yesterday, which was for the Prime Minister's Office and the Finance Ministry.
Yes, and if you want to weigh in on those conversations, remember you can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, though, we're looking at the subject of reading and how we can best incentivize it. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Do You Feel Like We Do by Peter Frampton, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Roshan and Noel. So, I don't know about you guys, but I have loved to read since I was very, very small, right? So, and this was a habit that I developed very early, partly because my parents both love to read. And it's something that stuck with me as I grew up, you know, even when I'm very busy, nothing calms me down better than having a nice long stretch of like 2 or 3 hours just to sit down and focus on a book, any book, right? And if you're searching for things to read, it appears that MPH is also now coming out with a buyback program. So these are secondhand books that are going to undergo kind of like a 14-day quarantine and sanitization and all that. But the aim of this program, and these books are going to be half off, is to encourage and excite readers to continuously read. So this kind of raised a question, I think, for us of how do you actually build that habit? Because especially when you've already got the habit, you know, sometimes you can kind of take it for granted. So how do you build that habit, perhaps in students or even young adults who haven't really got it in the first place?
I think it feels like this has to start when you are a child and you see your parents read, or someone senior to you who's in your home and you read, or you're surrounded by books. And I think that's always helpful. Then maybe if you grow up as an adult, for example, if you didn't have the luxury of, you know, being surrounded by books, and then maybe when you grow up as an adult, then you see people read. For me, I read a lot, and I find that even since as a child, I tend to read with a purpose. Like when I say with a purpose, I don't mean like there's no purposeful reading, but I read like because I want to get that information about something. Yeah, so reading encyclopedias. Yeah, since I was young, because there were a lot of encyclopedias at home. So somehow that habit has become like I'm reading because I want to get some information about something.
Noel is a goal-driven person. If we haven't learned this yet, I think this has been emphasized right here. But I do empathize with that point, right, Noel? A lot of times I am not a read for leisure kind of person. I do anything else for leisure because I don't want to. So a lot of times reading feels like work to me, even when I'm reading it for fun, like when I was reading Harry Potter and things like that. It still took out a lot out of me, as opposed to watching TV, which takes nothing out of me, or watching a movie, things like that. And generally, there are only very few non-fiction books that I read. Wait, hold on. What's the real stuff? Fiction? Non-fiction. Fiction is fake. Yes. There are very few.
To be honest, I think the lines are blurred sometimes.
There are very few fiction stories that I read, right? So Harry Potter, when those great franchises come along, I read those. Most of the time, I read nonfiction, and I like reading nonfiction. But at the same time, I have to balance it between how much information do I want to put into my head versus how much is actionable, right? I don't want to read it just because, you know, it's productivity porn. I need it to actually function in a certain way. So there's always that balance. But all said and done, I actually prefer listening. I prefer podcasts. I prefer audiobooks because they take a little less out of you, but at the same time, I think there's just something nice about and more relaxing about putting a pair of headphones on and then listening to, particularly if the voice is right? There's a relaxing voice there. It does help a lot. But there are plenty of ways to encourage reading, right? I mean, as long as the great stories come about. But thing is, books have so much more competition now than they had 50 years ago. And maybe it's just a natural way of things, right? Are we going to go back to enforcing or just proposing that everyone to go back to pen and paper when they're doing work? There are things have changed, right? So leisure, we can get it from so many things. Learning, we can get from YouTube videos that are so well produced today that sometimes they are more relatable than reading a book. I'm not saying the books are bad. I like books. And I think when you are reading something, there's a lot more work that goes into your brain's processing of that, of those visual cues that you may get.
I agree. And so I think that's why it is still nevertheless important to instill a reading habit. Because so I primarily read as a form of escapism. So I love fiction of pretty much any kind. And I read books. I listen to audiobooks. I also do watch, you know, the occasional drama that comes my way. And I find that in terms of audiobooks and video consumption, it actually takes, it's like you said, it takes a lot less out of you. It's a lot more passive in terms of your absorption of the content. Whereas when I have to pick up a book or if I'm reading an ebook on my computer or on my phone, the focus that is required for a long stretch of time is something that I do believe you have to train over years and with practice. Because it's like when you're kids, right? You are given picture books. So you read a couple of paragraphs and then you look at the pretty picture and you kind of disengage and then you go back to the paragraphs. And then over time, the pictures kind of disappear. And then I had a very funny interaction with my very young sister who saw me reading this brick of a book. And she was like, "Is that a book?" I'm like, "Yes, it is.
It's a doorstopper.
But where are the pictures? Why are the words so small?"
It's a dictionary. That's what it is. Noelle, I think Lynn just subtly told me that I don't have an good attention span. I think that's what I got from that entire conversation.
Yeah, so I do want to say this because I'm like you. I prefer podcasts and I prefer audiobooks because I can do other things like stretching, doing my housework and all that. Right?
I do that too. I like that. I like doing audiobooks while I'm doing other things.
Yeah, so but I think for me, because reading a book can be also quite tiring these days for me, I think on the eyes as well. So I tend to be very, very selective if I was to read a book. I have to say the book that maybe I last read was a book, a physical book, might be Steve Jobs, you know, that book on about him.
Oh, by Walter Isaacson.
Yes, that's right.
That was really good.
That was like also years ago.
Yeah, that was 2011, 2012. Yes. That was a long time ago. Actually, a lot of times books have to come to me recommended by someone who I trust. So the last one I read was Psychology of Money by Morgan Housel a few weeks back. Very fantastic read, especially when it comes to learning the differences that each of one of us have when it comes to money. It's a great read. But I agree with you there, Noelle. Ever since I started working, I've noticed a lowered capacity for reading because of how much we stare at reading material and screens during the work hours. That's when I started even diving deeper into the audio world.
Yeah, so let us know what you think as well. What are some creative ways that we could incentivize reading, not just with children, but with working adults as well who are time poor? WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have some messages coming up for you, and then we're looking at the subject of reskilling, so be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Heart Like a Wheel by Steve Miller Band, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanison, and Noelle Lim. Now, this pandemic and the fact that, unfortunately, a lot of people have found themselves either out of a job or in jobs that don't necessarily fit their idea of where they want to be going in the near future. And as a result, a lot of people, the conversation around reskilling and upskilling has started to really gain traction. I mean, it was already quite a significant part of the conversation before this because of digitalization and the fact that technology is edging out jobs in many sectors. But this has just cemented the idea that reskilling is going to be the solution for any kind of working woes that you have, right? But this BBC article, BBC in the Life Project, asks the question of whether it is actually, you know, this the idea of reskilling, is it actually a one-stop solution for any issues that you might have in the workplace? Noelle, what do you think about this? You attend a lot of courses and you're quite committed to kind of this the lifelong learning idea.
Yes, that's right. So I think we see this in this part of the world as well. Singapore, Malaysia, the government does provide a lot of job retraining schemes and or some form of funding basically to help people or to get people interested in all this extra learning to reskill or upskill or, you know, or to just deepen your skills in your particular area. I think it's always good to have all these opportunities, but as an individual, you need to actually do your own research to see whether this makes sense for you to even just take up this training. And I think it's always about having a conversation. So either you talk to somebody in your office, like maybe the HR person, to find out, like, I'm thinking of taking up these courses, this makes sense for my job, or if I'm thinking of switching jobs, is there an opportunity available in another department if I take on this upskilling or reskilling? And that's one. But if you think that maybe you don't want to stay on in your current workplace, then you need to get advice to really what are the opportunities that are available. Like, not if everyone can go and study data analytics, but there may not be enough jobs for data analysts.
Yeah, I think there's also the distinction we got to make, right, between upskilling and reskilling. So mm-hmm. if you got a job and you, as Noelle pointed out there, you talk to your HR, you do those courses. So that my cousin is in the IT line. So he kept doing certifications here and there that improved his values at the company and allowed him to move around as well. Now, reskilling is a whole different ballgame, right? It's essentially you've become outdated or you've been retrenched or you've been basically, there's no more jobs for you.
Your skills are obsolete.
Or simply you've decided you're no longer passionate in what
all
you're doing.
All that, right? Well, a lot of times when we take a look, especially this year, let's look at the airline industry or the oil industry, oil and gas, right? So this is a front page of the Malaysian Reserve. We take a look at how oil companies are looking towards renewable energies. Those who have been focused on the fossil fuel side may not be the people to be reskilled to take the oil companies to the next step, right? You may want to get people who are, well, who studied or live and breathe renewable energy. Fossil fuel is not the same as solar energy, and you may not be able to use the same engineers for that. And something like that requires years and years of study. You may not be able to do that at 40 or 50 years old, or it may not be the most optimum thing for you to reskill at that age, right? And then the other issue, of course, is things like if you're in your 50s and you were in a certain job line, is that necessarily the time? If your work has been taken over by technology, is that the time to start looking at reskilling to solve your woes? It's a very romantic idea, and it may work for a certain segment of society or this generation who will now understand the importance of reskilling for the rest of your life. But for those who lived generations where it was one job, one company, may not be ready for that. And that's a different solution we need to look out for them.
I think overall, we just need to be strategic when we think about, you know, going back to some form of education, classes or what have you, or another degree when it comes to reskilling or upskilling. Because maybe you just want to learn this particular skill that you've always wanted to learn. So you're doing it for knowledge's sake. And that's fine. You know, that's completely up to you. But for a lot of, I think for a lot of us, I know I myself have been tempted into the idea of taking courses just because everyone else is doing it. So you have to ask yourself, what's the end goal? Is it to get a job in this industry? Okay, if that's the case, then you need to kind of plot your way in there, and you also need to take into account, is everyone else doing the same thing? Because if you are following the crowd, then you are still going to have problems when there are a lot of people who are going to be fighting for the same small pool of jobs, because maybe the industry in our particular country is not as developed as you might expect. So all of these things kind of need to be taken into consideration as well. It's not just a matter of attend a course, your work life gets better. But let us know what you think as well about this. You know, is reskilling really for everyone? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. We're about to head into the 6:30 news bulletin, but first here is Love You Madly by Cake, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Rooney with When Did Your Heart Go Missing? And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. So we are turning our attention to what's been happening all over the world in this next quarter. So we're looking at the latest in the international headlines. And of course, the US is once again in the spotlight, because as President-elect Joe Biden has continued to choose more senior aides to lead his administration's efforts to defeat the coronavirus crisis in the US, Donald Trump has apparently vowed to continue the election fight.
Yes, so in his first, I think, TV interview since losing his re-election bid, I think that was on Sunday, he said he would never concede to Biden or abandon his conspiracy theories about ballot fraud. It's not like you're going to change my mind, he said. I think he told Fox News, and my mind will not change in 6 months. So it'd be interesting to see what happens when January comes around. But I think looking at some of the nominations that Biden has put together, the New York Times reported, I think, for example, the first black woman to lead the Council of Economic Advice, the first Indian-American woman as the head of the Office of Management and Budget. And also, interestingly, former Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen, she is expected to head the U.S. Treasury, and she will be the first woman in the role if she is confirmed by the Senate.
Yeah, I think some of these picks were initially reported by the Wall Street Journal, a lot of them you see, there are, in the overall picks that we've seen, there are some familiar faces from the Obama cabinet, although they were not maybe the heads at that time, right? We've seen a lot of deputy secretaries from that era come up. I mean, it has been 4 years since they were their first stints. So it's an interesting, he seems to be adding a lot more experience, a lot more diversity to the cabinet. And it is promising, right? At least it's actually nice to see people who've done the job before go back into the jobs, right? As opposed to, I mean, it's nice to have new faces and fresh voices, but when you're at the top of a government and the top of different departments, it's probably more important to have capable hands as opposed to quote-unquote new fresh faces and innovators. Mm-hmm. But we'll see. President Trump lost his this appeal he had in Pennsylvania. I think that was the most recent one. I think that was yesterday. The court rejected the fight against the vote count, and that's just pretty much been status quo, right? He's not won anything significant when it comes to this his fight against the November 3rd elections.
Yeah.
But he will continue this narrative, and even when he leaves office, which he will continue this narrative. I mean, Noel, what did you say just now? He said even if it's 6 months, he won't change his mind. He's never going to change his mind. This is the same man who fought for the to bring out Barack Obama's long-form birth certificate, claiming that he wasn't American. That was 8 years ago. And that's probably when he started his climb to be president, creating his fan base of anti-establishment, anti-democratic voter base.
Yeah, I think this comes back to the fact that Joe Biden's didn't particularly promise anything new in his quest to be president. Right, he just promised a return to stability, and I think his choice of administration and cabinet does appear to be trying to reflect that. You know, bring bringing back old hands to steer the ship. So that's going to be something that we are continuing to watch very closely. And he's appointed an all-woman cabinet. So we'll see who else he raises to his administration. But also we have had some news out of Australia. So Australia's Prime Minister Scott Morrison has hit back against Beijing and said that China should be utterly ashamed, and I quote, for sharing an image that depicted an Australian soldier, a fake image depicting an Australian soldier murdering an Afghan child. So this was something that was posted by a Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson. And I'm looking at an article in the BBC, and it has the image, and it's not particularly a pleasant sight. But I think this is on the back as well of Australia's sensitivity over it was an investigation into war crimes perpetrated in Afghanistan during, I believe it was around the 2013-2017 tour of duty there. So there's been a lot of sensitivity, and now that China's come out to say this, it's probably inflamed tensions even more.
I mean, this fits into this whole narrative that we're seeing between Australia and China, right? That there is a little bit of friction growing between these two nations, even though they have economic ties, and Australia is largely dependent on China for a lot of, trade, essentially, whether it's education or mining and things like that. But Australia has in recent times stood up for a few things, and it seems like China is responding with its own sense of, I mean, this is the country that still has a propaganda department, so I'm sure they are utilizing their know-how to the best of their ability, but it's not new, right? Countries do all sorts of propaganda against each other whenever there is a difference in narrative. I mean, Malaysia has faced it from Europe when it comes to palm oil.
Yeah, so I mean, each country, each government has some form of communications department, right? That's what they're called, a proper name. there are so many things going on now. Like for example, China's embassy in Australia, they circulated a list of local media to a local media outlining 14 policy areas where it said Australia had acted in a way that aggravated relations, apart from the fact that Australia called for an inquiry about the COVID-19 cause. I think they've also highlighted, for example, Australia's decision to block Chinese investment projects, ban Huawei from its 5G tender. So it looks like relations will continue to be testy.
Yes, and this is something that we're going to be looking at more closely later on at about 7:30 in conversation with Dr. Pradeep Taneja, lecturer in Asian Studies at the University of Melbourne. So if you're interested in listening more to this spat between China and Australia, be sure to tune in later on after the 7:30 news. But right now we have some messages for you, and then up next we're going to be turning our attention to our local papers and portals. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Talk of the Town by The Pretenders, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark Roshan-Kunnison and Noel Lim, bringing you the talk of our town this morning on the front pages of our newspapers and portals. What do we have this morning?
Well, let me start first with the Malaysian Reserve. Now, the main headline here for the Malaysian Reserve is about Petronas, but let me go to the sub-headline here, which is about Dewan Rakyat passing the PMO and MOF budget, because this caused a little bit of news yesterday, because for Head Start, there'll be 27 rounds of voting over the next 10 days at the committee stage of budget, right? So essentially, each department needs to get approved, each department's budget. So yesterday, we had the PM's department and the finance department. Both went into block voting because this time, opposition got its 15 votes, 15 people to stand up and then go to block voting. And there were actually quite a significant number of absentees, right, from yesterday's vote.
So if you take a look,
20
or so, I think.
20 absentees, yeah. And from both sides of the aisle, or many sides of the aisle. So the yes affirmative votes for Premier's department was 105-95, and the finance department was 107-95. And some notable names that weren't there on the government side. Were Tengku Razali, he wasn't there. Dato Sri Najib Razak wasn't there. And Dato Sri Said Hamidi weren't there. So what this means, well, that's anyone's guess, really. But there were a lot of other names as well from the opposition side. The whole Warisan gang were not there. And this was down to the fact that, there seems to be some disputes or some unhappiness with Dato Sri Anwar Ibrahim. So those are 8 votes. So imagine if all 8 came there and were there and all 8 voted with the opposition, it would have been a much closer fight. It would have been maybe 105 to 104, 107 to 104. And not to mention that there were other Pakatan Harapan MPs that weren't there, like Chow Kon Yeong, who's the chief minister of Penang, and a few other, 3-4 other opposition side who weren't there. 1, 2, 3, yeah, about 10 people from that side of the aisle.
Yeah, I think this is just this hasn't precisely put to bed the questions over whether or not
happiness at Pakatan Harapan.
Well, the questions over whether or not Anwar Ibrahim has actually lost support within his own coalition, right? So that's something that is likely going to continue to be a bit of a drama that we'll see play out in the Dewan Rakyat. Noel, what do you have in the New Straits Times?
So while politicians fight it out or not fight it out, life goes on, and a lot of the attention is still on COVID-19. So I think now the spotlight is really on foreign workers. Those some 1.7 million foreign workers, according to NST, will undergo a mandatory COVID-19 screening program starting today. Trade unions and employers are raising concerns about undocumented migrant workers. So Malaysian Trade Union Congress President Dato' Abdul Halim Mansor said that undocumented foreign workers were the real ticking time bomb. And so he says he's urging the government to step up efforts on this area. And like, for example, he points out that SOCSO coverage is only limited to documented foreign workers. So, you know, we need to do something about undocumented ones.
Yeah, so the last month, I think the government did launch an undocumented migrant worker recalibration program to try and legalize some foreign workers who are working here without the necessary papers. But I don't think there's been much take-up on that, really. And we're going to be talking about that later on about 7:45 with Ko Yu Ling, who's an independent economist at Sergi Ernam Advisors. In the meantime, though, the Star's front page does also have tests. Testing time in big letters here, and this is on the back of the testing of migrant workers. But it's also it also has a story on I think Johor. If I look at page 4 of the Star, which is looking to increase revenue, it apparently they are looking at some new sources of revenue which could bring in about 70 million ringgit to the state, which is quite drastically necessary considering Johor has been hard hit by the border closure to Singapore.
Now, speaking of COVID-19 and testing and all the like, we have some news out of the Ministry of Science, Technology and Innovations Minister, Khairi Jamaluddin, who told Dewan Rakyat yesterday that the COVID-19 vaccine will definitely cost less than 100 ringgit. And he hit in quotes, "I can categorically confirm that it is definitely less than 100 ringgit per dose as assumed by the State Assemblyman." Then this was a response in Parliament yesterday. He can't disclose, I think, the exact figures because they're all signed non-disclosure agreements as different pharmaceutical companies negotiate individually with the different countries. 3 billion ringgit has been allocated for the purpose of COVID-19 vaccines. And last Friday, we did see Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin announce that the government signed a deal with Pfizer, I think, for 12 and just under 13 million doses of its vaccine. So that is some form of good news. But again, efficacy rates and effectiveness are all, some numbers have come out. Long-term is still a bit of a question mark.
All right, and we're going to be bringing you more business news and analysis after the 7 o'clock news bulletin, which is coming up next. But first, here is Fleetwood Mac with Don't Stop, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.